Fuck you! Australia! Germany! Africa!
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. A half minutes past the hour, and yes, I was a little bit late. I got all wrapped up in my reading and looked up and went, you know, I think there's something I'm forgetting. There's something I should be doing. Oh my God! Yeah, let's start the program. Why don't we? Yeah. It happens. I'm sorry. So this is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go and click on chat room if you want to jump in and be part of the multimedia madcap extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. You'll be joined there, or you will be joining. They're already there. You'll be joined by Devin, Jug of Punch, Little Gray, and longtime and veteran, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although a third stage guild navigator, well, he's chosen not to fold space again. It looks like we're coming up on that time of the year when there's just not a heck of a lot of space folding going on in Northern California, for the man cave is apparently right uncomfortable. So a little bit later, we'll probably see the other half of our longtime and veteran, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator duo, namely Lottie. I'm sure he'll wander by a little bit later. Steve from Georgistan popping into the room. Good evening, Steve. That's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is, Devin. Post-mature broadcastulation. Ain't English fun? Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I'll try to remember that. Post-mature broadcastulation. It sounds like there should probably be a song. Yeah. The Horn is, of course, a listener-supported operation. I can happily announce, as I did last night, yes, indeed, against all odds, and this does not require me to use a Phil Collins bumper, song for a bumper, but against all odds, we managed to beat the Swede again in June. That means the Beat the Swede challenge goes up to $110 for July. Uh-huh. How about that? Yeah. That's pretty big doings. So thank you one and all for making that possible as we ran downhill toward the end of the month of June. Two rock solid months of summer left to us, and well, this is a sentimental day for me. The first day of July, this particular first day of July 2016, would have been my parents' 55th. Wedding anniversary. Of course, well, neither of them lived to see that, but it would have been. And you know, from a personal standpoint, it's an important date for me, because it sort of enabled, you know, me to be here. So wherever you are or aren't, happy anniversary, Mom and Dad. Now, it's also, the first day of any given month is also auspicious insofar as Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge comes along on the first broadcast day of every month. If the first is on the Sunday, then the first broadcast day is Monday the 2nd, or Saturday, Sunday, Monday the 3rd. But no, it's Friday the 1st of July, and that means, yes indeed, Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge is on the table. That means... That means that we try to raise $200 to match a challenge courtesy of Shirley in Wisconsin, who is faithfully there month in and month out. And we'll keep track of that along the way, and hopefully we will meet that challenge and be off to a roaring, righteous, good start for the month of July. Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge, of course. If you want to contribute via PayPal, just go over to headonradionetwork.com, click on the tab Contribute, and then just fill out the fields there. If you want to become a monthly subscriber, just click Make This a Monthly, a recurring monthly donation, and you'll be off and running. You can just put in your name, your address. You can leave off what it is that you do there. At the bar, where everybody knows your name, just get to the next screen and do PayPal, credit cards, etc. And hopefully, we will meet Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge, real nice and early. We'll cross our fingers. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, the mailing address for checks and money orders made payable to the Horn, not Bob Kincaid, because Bob Kincaid never sees them. That's Boss Man Wayne's job, is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV, 25801. And if you want to do it that way, shoot me an email, and I'll let Boss Man Wayne know that he can leave his spider-proof gloves in the trusty red pickup truck, and he won't have to take anything more with him than his handy, short-handled coal shovel, which he can use if he happens to run into a Klansman. Because, Klansman's faces were just made for coal shovels. I mean, that's my opinion, but... Yeah. Okay, so we got that out of the way. Now is the time to note that this is, in fact, Friday on the Front Porch, so in about, 50 minutes and change, we will fire up the Horn Molloy Skype chat group and get rolling with the most engaging, extraordinary, ordinary roundtable there is in broadcast media today. No multimillionaire professional pundits, just everyday ordinary folks who have good common sense and participate in carrying, the 1% on their backs every week. And so it's usually a pretty darn good time. If you've never participated in Friday on the Front Porch, it's very easy. First thing you need to do is get in touch with your inner Skype. And once you've set up your Skype account, which is very easy, then send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk, and he will in turn show you the breadcrumb trail over to the Horn Molloy Skype chat group, and you'll be part of the festivities. We maintain as well a phone line, namely the stress line, for people who can't, for a variety of reasons, use Skype. That, of course, is 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN, and you can hear them, they can hear you, I can hear you both, y'all can hear me. It's just awesome the way the technology works. Oh, did I do the Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid part? I don't think I did. Okay, so now that's covered. Goody, Chatroom Jesus has come wandering into the chat room, as has Laborman and VT Blom. Welcome one and all. More will be along, I'm sure, as we roll. Now, let's see. Where to begin, this being Friday on the Front Porch? We wouldn't want any of this week's morans to be held over for Monday or anything, because they would certainly be stale by then. You've seen by now the story, and it's not like I'm saying this person was a moron. This is pathetic. This is pitiful. people who jump on technology early are known as early adopters. Early adopters often pay more than they might necessarily need to once. Think about, for those of you of a certain age, think way, way back in the dim mists of time to the first person who got a Sony Betamax VCR player recorder on your block. Yeah, they paid a fortune. And, you know, they would periodically tell you how much awesomer the Sony Betamax format was than VHS, you know, until there weren't any more movies to watch on Sony Betamax. I mean, there's lots of examples like that along the way, but that was the one that popped into my mind. And the other part of it is that early adopters often find that things don't quite work as they had planned. I, being relatively new to the cult of Apple, have been warned, and I'm taking it seriously from here on out, warned against just, you know, jumping right out there and downloading every new operating system that comes down the pike from, Cupertino? It was sage advice, and I'm taking it going forward, because otherwise I'd just jump right out there and, yep, get it. Don't have much choice with regard to Microsoft, but early adopters, you know, there can be problems. And so it was for the guy in Florida, said to be a former Navy SEAL, worked in some kind of information technology, and bought himself a Tesla automobile and named it Tessie. And it came with what is described as, here's the part where I admit my technological ignorance, automobile autopilot. You know, it's got radar cameras all over it, and theoretically it is artificially intelligent enough to drive the car, keep it in the lane, and not hit anything. Except, you know, when it doesn't. And that's when becoming an early adopter can be, at the very least, hazardous to your health. Which is kind of what happened. Anyone listening to this program knows that I'm a pretty big fan of Tesla. I think they're probably the future of automobiles. It was the first known death caused by a self-driving car. The announcement was made this past Thursday, the 30th day of June, you know, as in yesterday. The accident itself happened on May the 7th in a place called Williston, Florida. Joshua Brown was the driver. He was 40 years old. He was from Ohio. He had a Tesla Model S, put it into autopilot mode. And, well, there was a problem with the sensor software. Apparently the sensors on the automobile failed insofar as they were unable to distinguish a huge white 18-wheel truck and trailer as it went across the highway. In other words, the car was just down the road, and you know, the tractor trailer wasn't doing anything wrong. It was legally crossing the road. And the Tesla just kind of shot right under the trailer. The Levy County Journal newspaper report, quoting the police report, said the top of the vehicle was torn off by the force of the collision. 62-year-old Frank Baresi, the tractor-trailer driver, was uninjured. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has opened an official inquiry, into the accident. And the question is, previously, you know, there's just some things you don't do with the goddess of irony. The decedent in this case had previously posted a video of his autopilot avoiding a collision with a truck and saving his life. A million people, before he was killed, a million people had seen that video. Tesla claims that 130 million miles have been logged with its autopilot system without an accident. Tesla noted that, quote, among all vehicles in the U.S., there's a fatality every 94 million miles. I'm wondering, and I say this because in the wake of this story, I started looking around a little bit, and a certain amount of autonomy, computer autonomy, is being built into modern vehicles, especially if you spend enough to get it. And I want to strike a balance here in discussing this. I know. You'd probably rather if I said I was talking about, you know, how awful Donald Trump is, or how awful Hillary Clinton is, or how awful they both are, or, and, you know, why not Bernie or bust, or whatever. But everybody else is already doing that. Maybe everybody else is already talking about this. I don't know. But everybody from Mercedes to BMW to GM to Chrysler, Jeep, Ram truck, whatever, is working on some kind of, and it's billed as a safety feature. Subaru says that, you know, they can prevent an accident, you know, your car can prevent an accident all by itself, as long as the system is engaged and, you know, even if you're not paying attention. And I want to be careful about this, because I don't want to be one of those these newfangled automobiles. They'll never be able to replace a quality horse and buggy with a good whip. Yeah, he's going nowhere. Harry James, the famous big band trumpet player. Oh, this rock and roll will never go anywhere. So no, but at the very least, a question arises whether, and you know, this applies to Google Car too, whether self-driving automobiles are really as great an idea as they're billed to be. I mean, I read, I've mentioned from time to time, the fact that I enjoy the science fiction works of Richard K. Morgan. And in his Earth of 100 or so years from now, highways are populated by autonomous tractor trailers that just go beeping and communicating down electrified highways that have markers designed for keeping things in, yada, yada, yada. And okay, I guess. But what happened to Farfignugen? Yeah, I know, Volkswagen lied. But not about the Farfignugen. you're supposed to kind of, or at least that's the way it's billed, driving is supposed to be something fun, something pleasurable. And even if it's not fun or pleasurable, it's probably something you really need to pay attention to, you know, if you're the driver. I'm such a sad little control freak that I can barely stand to be on the passenger side or, God knows, in the back seat of a vehicle. I have problems giving up, you know, control. You can see the obvious benefit of computer assisted systems that can, you know, see an accident about to happen and stop it. The Tesla system apparently is supposed to annoy. The news story I'm looking at says nudge, but annoy drivers enough that they will keep their hands on the wheel. Oh, okay. I'm not the only. Okay, so Devin is channeling his inner geezer. Yeah, horses were the best autopilot. There were no DUIs when horses did the driving, and they always knew the way home. Yeah, that's why Robert Frost said, "My little horse must think it queer to stop without a pool hall near. He knows the way through the drifting snow." But I guess this is the future. And maybe it's the future we want. I mean, gosh, it would be a whole lot more fun than just sitting there driving the car if you and everybody else in the car can be sitting there texting on your little on our little handheld devices, or maybe playing backgammon or dealing out a rubber of bridge. The folks at Tesla are, you know, quite upset. They said, "The customer who died in this crash had a loving family, and we are beyond saddened by their loss. He was a friend to Tesla and the broader electric vehicle community, a person who spent his life focused on innovation and the promise of technology and who believes strongly in Tesla's mission." And heck, I believe strongly in Tesla's mission. I'll never be able to afford one of their automobiles, but I believe strongly in their mission. Personally, I think if they really want to put a Tesla through its paces, they need to just hand one off to me to use for 2 or 3 years, and I'll report back on how it handles the winding and beaten all to hell roads of West Virginia. And then if a Tesla can handle West Virginia roads, it can handle anywhere in the United States. Did you hear that, Elon? Yeah, offer remains open. And if you see George Soros anywhere, tell her to check his mail. I don't know. I put this at the top of the program, just because, you know, the future is always on its way, and the past is occurring, you know, microsecond by microsecond. And when you couple this with the fact that, for instance, in places like Texas and, yes, here in West Virginia, they won't allow those dang newfangled electric motor cars to be sold here. And see, that's why. I mean, I can't imagine. I don't care how autonomous the damn system is. I can't imagine running down Golly Mountain without my hands on the wheel. Partly because running up and down Golly Mountain's kind of fun. And I imagine it would be fun, you know, in a Tesla. But somewhere, Republican West Virginia Senate President, car dealer, and self-dealing Republican gubernatorial candidate, Bill Cole, is rubbing his hands together. Excellent, excellent. Now I will be validated as a visionary who kept those death traps off West Virginia roads. Yeah, so we got that. Stuff to wrap up as we get toward the, as we move through the last 3 hours of the programming week. Bad day to be in. Bad day to go for a snack in the diplomatic area of Bangladesh. Gunfire reported there. Hostages taken. Because it's another day on Earth. Meanwhile, though, USA Today reports, and this is a sign of change too. Of course, stereotypes become stereotypes because they are seen to have a sort of broad applicability, but that does not necessarily mean that it's 100% foolproof. Nonetheless, the Germans have a reputation for being rather orderly people. And it often works out to their benefit. And so it came as a bit of a surprise to me when Agnes sent me a story, the story of Oliver Park, 51 years old. A German man who just this past Wednesday was living out a lifetime dream. It would be for me. He had gone to see Machu Picchu in Peru. And while he was posing for a photo, he fell off a cliff to his death because it's a long way down to anywhere from anywhere you are when you're at Machu Picchu. And everybody seems to be in agreement. They're not necessarily in agreement about exactly how it happened, that he may have just lost his footing, or one other account says that he was having someone else take a photo of him, and he decided to jump up in the air so it would look like he was flying. Okay, but anyway, in the Washington Post story, they said he asked a man who was there to take a photo of him. The man came over to take the photo, and in the moment he was handing him the camera, he lost his balance and fell. But regardless of which version you buy into there, here's the thing. There were signs all over the place saying, don't go here. Access forbidden, verboten, aviso, who knows what languages. The area he was in was obviously and copiously marked as not suitable for, tourists. Yeah, that's why, for instance, there are when one runs into an old abandoned mine shaft in West Virginia, quite often one will be met with iron bars Because even though people would ordinarily know that going into a place like that is a really, really bad idea, they're somehow drawn to it just the same. People. Go figure. Oh, and from the Department of Really Creepy Bugs. You remember how the movie Jaws just kind of ruined going swimming for a lot of people for, you know, a couple of weeks, couple of months, whatever? It was not good for the beach vacation industry when Jaws came out. No. A lot of people stayed out of the water. Well, a big vacation destination for people wanting to, you know, enjoy watery pursuits are Thailand, Vietnam, pretty booming tourist areas there. Congratulations, Thailand, Vietnam, and Laos. You are home to the first amphibious centipede ever known. Scolopendra cataracta. I'm looking at the photograph right now, and I'm probably going to have nightmares. A brand new species discovered in Laos, Thailand, and Vietnam. Back in 2001, an entomologist by the name of George Beccoloni saw the little critter zipping into the water while he was on his honeymoon in Thailand. Real romantic entomologist, George Beccoloni. Hey, honey, look at the centipede I found. Ow! So in the 15 years since that happened, the bug, it's not really a bug, has finally been thoroughly described. Entomologist Beccoloni, being a diehard romantic, told National Geographic, "Wherever I go in the world, I always turn over rocks beside streams, and that's where I found this centipede, which was quite a surprise. Pretty horrific looking, very big, with long legs and a horrible dark greenish-black color." And what took entomologist Beccoloni by surprise was the fact that the centipede, in attempting to get away from him, ran into the water and hid. That did not slow down honeymooner Beccoloni. Because, we'll go back to the room in a little bit. No, you're awesome. I love you so much. No, really, I do. I can't wait. But go find me an empty jar, would you? And he did. He spent his time then, and God loves scientific curiosity. He spent his time trying to catch the centipede, and he put it in a jar of water, and as he noted, it swam like an eel. Wondering about what it does, he said, "I would bet this species goes into the water at night to hunt aquatic or amphibious invertebrates." But yes, along the way, it has an excruciating bite. Great. Didn't say anything about Cambodia, did they? Maybe. No, that's just cobras and other kind. Maybe I just better stay home. Maybe I wasn't cut out to be a world traveler after all. No, maybe not. So there's that. And there's a lot more. A whole bunch more. We're still recovering from a semi-natural disaster here in West Virginia. Latest estimates by the state of West Virginia indicate that more than 5,000 homes have been either destroyed or damaged by the great big humongous monumental climate change floods of a little over a week ago. That's a lot of people FEMA's not going to help. You know, a lot of people have this notion that when a disaster happens, FEMA just moves in and, oh, what, your house was ruined? Okay, well, we got that. No. Really, no. But there will be, you know, there will be more information, more accounting. And we're being ever so careful here in this state to not say the dreaded words in relation to the flood here, to wit, climate change. Because that just wouldn't be nice, right? I mean, some places, the water has been a week in receding. Here on the border between the county I live in and the next county over, Nicholas County, there's a teeny tiny little place called Belva. It's not much of anything. It's just a place on the side of the road. And Belva has been sitting in standing water for a week. The water is finally beginning to recede. It was the Gauley River, G-A-U-L-E-Y, that got out of its banks in that instance. Yeah. Devin pointing out, God's will. Thoughts and prayers, y'all. Thoughts and prayers. But the larger point is that it is a disaster, and it has a broad impact. There are still National Guard vehicles to be seen, big trucks full of refuse going God knows where. You wonder where they dump this stuff. But there are disasters, and there are, you know, disasters. I mean, there's the kind of stuff, oh, yeah, sure, yeah, your town got washed away, you lost your home, you barely were able to cling to life. But then there's the real disaster. Like the disaster in North Carolina. The state of North Carolina maintains something called an Emergency Response and Disaster Relief Fund. Obviously, the purpose of the fund is to be used in the cases of, well, emergencies and disasters. Like, say, when a coal ash sludge dam gets loose and poisons an entire area. Because, you know, that's happened. It was back in 2014 when one coal ash sludge dam burst and literally thousands of tons of toxic waste went into the Dan River. Courtesy of Duke Energy. And, of course, much of the ash from that coal ash was coal ash that was generated by burning coal that came from blasted, poisonous mountaintop removal sites in Appalachistan. Mm-hmm. And in addition, people who rely on drilled wells in the region have found out that communities near the Dan River poisoning got their wells tainted. And there's really not much you can do to untaint a well. So, shortly after the Dan River disaster,
it was a spill. It was just a spill.
No, shortly after the Dan River disaster, the legislature in North Carolina passed a bill that would have insisted that Duke Energy clean up all of its coal ash sludge dams and make sure that they were safe and that they wouldn't, you know, have that happen again. Enter North Carolina Governor Pat McCrory. Asshole. Pat McCrory, before he became governor of North Carolina, worked for Duke Energy for about, 28 years or so. And now, now, legislation has been passed by the North Carolina House of Representatives as of yesterday. It had already passed the Senate in North Carolina. And it is presently on the desk of former Duke Energy employee Pat McCrory, governor of North Carolina. And it's going to let Duke Energy get away with not cleaning up its coal ash disasters in waiting. So instead of, Frank Hollerman is a senior attorney with the Southern Environmental Law Center, and he said, "What's been removed from this bill because it is fatal to Duke's plans is serious emphasis on protecting the state's water supplies. Building a water line doesn't clean up the groundwater that's been polluted." No, but not having to clean up the mess saves Duke Energy a lot of money, and I'd guess that Governor McCrory is probably heavily invested in Duke Energy. It's not like he was a minimum wage worker at Duke Energy. And, you know, that could affect the share price for Duke Energy's poor little abused coupon-clipping shareholders. It may be all the way up to the 13th decimal. And up with this, Pat McCrory in the North Carolina teabagging legislature will not put. In case you're wondering, in addition to the Dan River sludge dam, there are 13 other Duke Energy coal ash toxic waste storage areas in the state of North Carolina. The North Carolina Department of Environmental Quality has gone so far as to determine that not one of the total of 14 coal ash toxic waste storage areas in the state of North Carolina are safe to the public. It is so bad that the courts have ordered Duke Energy to clean up 7 of its sites in North Carolina and 2 in South Carolina. But the other 6... not so much, and they're the ones that got the big break in this legislation that Pat McCrory will, as sure as God made little green apples, if you eat a belly full of them, they'll give you the runs, will sign. Because, you know, I mean, hey, they had one Duke Energy storage dam burst. I mean, what are the odds that that could happen again? I mean, really? I mean, after all, it's just a super concentrated, poisonous, toxic, deadly soup of arsenic, mercury, lead, manganese, magnesium, selenium, barium, cadmium. You know, pretty much the heavy metal side of the periodic table of the elements. Once you've had one coal ash disaster, the chances of having another one, I mean, they just go through the floor, don't they? I mean, never mind that every one of these coal ash, toxic waste, sludge storage areas is pretty much maintained the same way. I mean, it couldn't happen again. Silly. But remember, the legislature that did that dirty business, or is doing, I don't think we can use the past tense to describe what the North Carolina legislature is up to and what their governor is doing alongside them. What they're doing, they were put there to do. Art Pope, who's sort of a little mini self-contained Koch brothers for North Carolina, bought him a Republican legislature and bought him a Republican governor and convinced enough blithering idiots to go to the polls and vote for them so that he could accomplish his nefarious goals. Yeah, Mr. Hollerman also said, this legislature has adopted a wide-ranging change in a North Carolina environmental law at the request of a confessed environmental criminal. Yeah, and? I mean, those regulations are real job killers. Never mind that the coal ash, sludge, toxic waste storage areas are sure enough people killers. We can't threaten the money. And really, doesn't North Carolina have enough clean water as it is? I mean, it's so overrated, isn't it? Clean water. I mean, there's so much of it, you can go to the store and buy it in bottles. I mean, it's everywhere the clean water is. So why would you want to make sure? Oh, shut up, Bob. Pat McCrory is on the ballot for re-election in November, and it will say a lot about the people of North Carolina if, after shenanigans like this and HB2, they let him keep his job. But seriously, I mean, coal ash, sludge, floods, poisonings. As I said, there are disasters and there are disasters. And that is why the North Carolina legislature is moving as quickly as it possibly can to pull $500,000 out of the Emergency Response and Disaster Relief Fund and assign it to be used to pay lawyers defending HB2. You know, the bathroom bill. Oh, that's not a joke. I'm not kidding. That's really, really, well, real. because where people go potty is far more a potential disaster in North Carolina than having some money set aside to deal with the immediate consequences of what happens when, say, a Duke Energy toxic coal ash sludge waste containment area dam turns to jello and it goes into one of the many rivers that run through North Carolina. Really? I'm not kidding. I couldn't make this up if I tried. If I had awakened this morning and thought, hey, let's just pull people's legs and tell them some crazy story that couldn't ever possibly happen, and I'd come up with this. I couldn't come up with this. This is too horrifying to contemplate. McCrory's opponent in November is Democratic current Attorney General Roy Cooper. He considers the defense of HB 2, and you know he's a real live, honest kid, honest to goodness, no kidding lawyer, a national embarrassment. Meanwhile, HB 2. Is costing millions upon millions of millions of millions of dollars from the state's economy. And nothing, while they've tweaked at the law, they haven't done what they essentially need to do, namely repeal the damn thing. So, what a delightful little slice of reality this is. Pat McCrory wants $500,000 to defend the bigotry of the state of North Carolina in trying to determine where somebody goes pee-pee. You know, it was just a couple of nights ago, I forget who it was, someone remarked on the program that it had been a while since we'd had a potty story. And I said something like, yeah, but I'm sure it'll be back. Well, it is. Oh, it is, it is. Because, you know, there are always wing nuts. And there are always bigots. And there are always people who just, you know, sit around worrying about, I guess, I don't know, worrying about the potty. Not something that I ever really much worried about. Unless I had a sort of sense of dire urgency to find one. Laura Ingraham, on the other hand, well, she's really, really worried. She's afraid to go to a public restroom at all now because she may run into some trans person. I guess she can't just go to the restroom, do what needs to be done in the restroom, and then just wash up and get out. She has to stop and contemplate politics and worry about which manner the urine stream is leaving all of her bathroom compatriots. Now, this is also a woman who says that if parents allow their children to express their natural gender identity, that it constitutes child abuse, which is a serious charge insofar as child abuse can result in a child being taken away from his or her parents and all too often placed with some godforsaken gang of fundamentalists. Here, sugar. You play. Look, I got you a Barbie dressed up as the Virgin Mary. You play with her, not that old Tonka truck over there.
But I want to play with the truck.
Demon, spawn, Satan, get out! Say, Bebe.
No, this is all too sadly real. Because remember, Laura Ingraham is one of those people that gets probably millions of dollars for sitting behind a microphone that she can't even operate and yapping at it every day. To wit, the following.
Oh, we have a new transgender update for you as well. New transgender news for all of you who are bathroom goers and public restrooms. I think a lot of people are going to be walking around with just...
All of you who are bathroom goers. Don't leave out the bathroom warriors, Laura, like yourself. I mean, don't sell anybody short, but listen to her suggestion for future world. You know, if people could just go to the restroom, you know, where they're comfortable.
I think a lot of people are going to be walking around with just depends on from now on. They're not, just not going to use the bathroom. They're going to... Adult diapers. Now, diapers for everybody. No one's going to be going to the bathroom. If you have little kids, there's going to be no bathrooms. We're just going to all wear depends. Then we can still, everyone's just be happy. Then you'll be in your own bathroom. Yeah, everyone's bathroom is just their own clothes. Okay, so this is what we're going to go to. 855-40-LAURA.
Yeah, no, really. Behold the mind, such as it is, of a right-wing conservative. Laura Ingraham would rather soil herself and, you know, wet herself than run the risk of pottying in the same room as a trans person. Really? Yeah. And if these were just outliers to the culture, all they would be is kickers at the end of a 5-minute newscast. And just when you thought it was safe to go back into the restroom, Laura Ingraham says everybody should shit themselves and wear depends. But she's not an outlier. This woman speaks for the attitudes espoused by tens of millions of American people. Meanwhile, Brother Deacon Gerald says, walking around with depends on all day? That is one of the stupidest fucking things I've ever heard. And, brother, I've heard some dumb shit before. I guess the perfume industry would get a bump. But no, this is the manifestation of the attitudes and the horrors that are a reality for tens of millions of Americans. And it still blows my mind. Does Laura Ingraham spend any time at all worrying about people's access to clean, drinkable, fresh water? No. Does Laura Ingraham spend lots of time worrying about where people go poo-poo and pee-pee? Yes. Ta-da! Note coming in from a member of the Trinity of Steve. I always have to laugh at your, as my, attempts to even describe these sorts of industrial horrors. How suicidal is an economic system that insists on poisoning the water supply with a species of toxic waste for which the language doesn't even have an appropriate vocabulary? Pretty damn, I'd say. And I think I know what Steve's getting at here, because I mean I read these and it's because of where my where I come from, where I live. I read these news stories about things like coal ash, and that's what they say. They say coal ash. And I don't consider it an overworking of the adjectival process to add the word toxic, deadly, poisonous in front of that. Because, you know, coal ash, I mean, you know, it's coal ash. I mean, just like, you know, there's ashes, if you're a smoker, you know, there's ashes in your ashtray. I mean, if you've got a wood-burning stove, every now and then you got to scoop it out. God knows if you got a coal-fired stove, you got to scoop it out and get the clinkers out of it. It's just ash. But on the other hand, insofar as, say, Todd and I have been carrying on our little description, our little barbecuing and smoking conversation for a couple of weeks now. And hey, Todd, if you're listening, we're going to do some ribs this weekend. And I got me a nice heap of pecan chunks and cherry chunks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be some smoke. Mm-hmm. Yeah, big fun. The grandbabies are old enough to get really messy and enjoy some ribs. So, yeah, it's going to happen. But if you do things like smoking meat, you know that you dare not leave the ash in the bottom of the firebox for very long, or you will not have a bottom of your firebox very long. I mean, my old smoker is shot to hell, and that's even though I scoop out and try to clean out the firebox every time it's had a fire in it. Because sooner or later, that ash, and that's just wood ash, okay? It's not coal ash, that's just wood ash. And there's enough there to turn in, it eats right through the sheet metal steel. But all these stories just say, coal ash. So I think that's what Steve means by poisoning the water supply with a species of toxic waste for which language doesn't even have an appropriate vocabulary. Yeah, amen. Meanwhile, down in Shreveport, Jack writes, subject line, Ingram. And when a right-winger thinks they'll need to just go right in their pants, they've got the perfect example. Ted Nugent. Ta-da! Again. So I think we've at least got a starting place for some stuff to talk about. It is the first day of July. Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge is on the table. We're trying to raise... Well, the way the challenge works is Shirley puts up $200. If everybody matches, or if people come along and match Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge, then we get the extra $200. See how it works? Your 5 becomes 10, 10 becomes 20, 20, 40, 40 50, 100, you know, up to $200. Yeah. Because so far we are, during the course of the program... not so much. So, I tell you what. Let's take a break. And fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. And get Friday on the front porch well and truly underway, shall we? Again, if you've never participated before, all you have to do is get on Skype, sign in, and send a contact request that says Friday on, you know, and include a note that says like Friday on the front porch. And send it to Sparky Dunk, Sparkydunc, on Skype. And easy as can be, you'll be part of the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. And if you need, because you can't use Skype, if you need telephone access, we do keep a line here for you, 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. That's the stress line, and it's yours for the using. Friday on the front porch, on the horn, listener-supported conversation radio like no other. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sound just like the new sound over the new ground. Ain't the new sound just like the old sound? Look at the noose now over the burning ground.
We'll be right back.
Well, that ought to perk things up a little bit. A little Rage Against the Machine. Here on Friday on the Front Porch. Ashes in the Fall. Rage Against the Machine. And it is Friday on the Front Porch for this, the first day of July, 2016. And let's run over to the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Hey, Sparky.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
Hot, of course.
Yes.
I'm getting tired of it, but you know,
it's like you're being locked out of the man cave.
Yeah, a day or two more, and it's going to drop under 100, but it didn't hit 107 like they said it would.
Yeah, what, 106 and quit?
I think it's only 101 today so far.
Jeez, I got no complaints.
101.5.
Yeah, we got up in the 80s, you know. And there's a big difference between 80 and 100.
Here there is.
Well, just about anyway. I mean, 80's warm. 100's miserable. Sparky, is it a dry 100?
No, it's a little humid today. It's 24% humidity.
Oh. Nah, I'm sorry. That's a dry heat.
Yeah.
When you've got 100 degrees and it feels like you can just grab fistfuls of wet air and wring the water out of it. Yeah.
Hey, it's funny. I've been to a place like that.
Have you now?
Well, yeah, of course.
Yeah, would that be Guam?
No. Thailand.
Oh, Thailand. Okay. Yeah.
Where they have all the weird bugs.
Yeah. I knew you would enjoy the new centipede. That's a nasty looking little creature.
I didn't get to.
But you know, ecosystems being what they are, I bet there's something in the water there that finds them perfectly delightful, downright tasty.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure the Kwong monster would eat it.
The who what?
The Kwong monster. It's like a Komodo dragon, only a little bit smaller. And it lives in the Kwong. The Kwong is a drainage ditch and sewage kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
There was one big huge ditch that ran all the way through the whole base, which drained off all the rainwater and everything else out to the Gulf of Thailand when it rained or something like that. Plus, it usually had a pretty nice bunch of standing water in it because it grew a lot of green vegetation and everything around it also. And a lot of bugs were in there. And we had these big things called rice beetles.
Yeah.
They're bigger than a silver dollar, and they fly.
Yeah, maybe I wasn't cut out to be the world traveler after all. I think I was right.
But the Thais love to eat them. They cook them up.
The rice beetles?
Yeah.
Well, then it's probably protein.
We had a snack bar in off of our electric shop there, an FMS, and the gals that worked in there at night, there was a right at the corner of the building, there was a big old mercury vapor light, so the rice beetles would kind of collect there because of the light, and they'd catch them.
Yum, yum. Just had a note come in from Clarence in regard to the Laura Ingraham story about, you know, well, what she's going to do rather than, oh, dear. But Clarence says, Bob, do these right-wing folks understand they've been using bathrooms with transgender population for a long time? They're not some new invention. Yeah, they just don't want to know they are. It's kind of like, you know, gay people in the closet or people of color being able to use the same restroom or the same lunch counter or the same water fountain. I mean, they just don't want to. They don't want to be confronted with it. They want to live in their little world. And they want the world to conform to them.
What about what just happened with the military?
Well, see, that's, I mean, yeah, I got that story, too. Apparently, it's okay to be transgendered in the military now. Ashton Carter said nobody's going to be thrown out of the military anymore for being trans, which is fine by me.
So do you think, this is Trey in,
hey, Trey.
Pakistan, you think that'll bring the end to Don't Ask, Don't Tell finally?
Well, Don't Ask, Don't Tell's gone.
Right, that's what I'm saying, but I mean, this would probably be like the end of it, period. I guess you're right, it is gone. That was kind of a dumb comment, sorry about that.
No, no worries, but I don't know. I thought you were going to say, is it going to bring on the end of the world?
No.
Because
I'm talking about, like, remember when Obama came in?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Don't ask, don't tell, and this is like the final chapter of it. Like, now if the right-wingers are going to get all upset and be patriotic, well, guess what? These people, these transgenders are fighting for you, too, so. I don't think
but if
like
but if you check in with the right wing, it is the end of the world.
It's true.
And I guess
you know, ever laugh at the end of the world for those guys? They're always upset about something.
Well, I mean, for instance, I got a story here from a Fox Newser who says that that having trans people in the military is a disgrace. Because I guess he thinks we're he must think the entire military is trans, or that, you know, people are going to, hey, the military's got this thing about uniforms. So, you know, and by the way, this is the Fox News asshole who called Barack Obama a total pussy last year and got himself suspended for a while. But, well, they weren't going to suspend him forever or anything. They let him come back. We're talking here about the ironically named what's his first name? His last name's Peters. Mm-hmm. I guess he thinks they're going into battle with I don't know, feather boas instead of helmets or something. The stupid here is astonishing. Stunishing. That's a new word.
It was like when they had the Catholic League guy that you had on the other day, you were listening to with you.
Oh, Bill Donahue?
They attacked him and they got the gay on him. I was like, what? Did he just say that?
Yeah.
Like he's attacked and it's like something that can, I don't know. Whenever I hear that and when I hear people say that the gay, they can just live their gay lifestyle, which I still don't know what that means. What is a gay lifestyle? I don't get it.
Me either. But Ralph Peters is horrified. He's disgusted because right winger. I don't know if Laura Ingraham sent him his first package of Depends or not, or because see, this opens the door to military potty woes. See how this stuff works? Oh, by the way, good evening. Good evening, Tim San. Is Tim there?
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
Doing fine and actually happy today.
Well, if I understand your email correctly, you've got something to be happy about.
Yes, I do. The governor signed a bill to law on, I guess, strengthening our gun control act, or gun control. And the three bills that he signed are require an ID and background check to purchase ammunition and create a new database of ammunition owners. And also there's a waiting period for ammunition, too. Ban possessions of ammunition magazines that hold more than 10 bullets. And also restrict the loaning of guns without background checks to close family members.
Well,
he detailed a few.
Yeah, see, that was the part that got me. This idea that the world's most powerful, most well-financed, most terrifying terrorist organization, the NRA, thinks you should just be able to go over and knock on your next door neighbor's house. Said, "Pardon me, can I borrow a cup of AR-15? I'm out, and I'm a going dancing." Hey, oh, by the way, speaking of, it turns out that Omar Mateen, there's video of him going to a hookup in a hotel room. So the whole idea that he was some sort of terrorist, yeah, that's pretty over now.
So what does that say about all the knee-jerk reactions of, you name the person on the right that was talking about how this was a terrorist attack, ISIS. I mean, what do they say now?
Oh, they just ignore it and keep saying that's a threat from ISIS.
True.
Good point. No, it wasn't. Which leads me to this thing that, the NRA and teabaggers support, the 10th Amendment. Well, that's what the governor did. He used the 10th Amendment to create these laws. And now they're mad?
Well, I mean, sometimes the 10th Amendment is good and sometimes it's bad. I love the quote from California spokesperson for the NRA, Amy Hunter.
Governor Jerry Brown today signed a draconian gun control package that turns California's law-abiding gun owners into second-class citizens. The governor and legislature exploited a terrorist attack to push these measures through, even though the state's already restrictive laws did nothing to stop the attack in San Bernardino.
Only Amy Hunter didn't say San Bernardino. She said San Bernardino, but I always say San Bernardino in honor of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who forgot to become an American for a very long time.
And it's San Bernardino.
Jeez. I mean, San Bernardino.
So I guess they want terrorists to have guns.
They want everybody to have guns. They want everybody to have guns as long as nobody has to go potty with a trans person.
Okay.
See?
But what if we don't want the guns? I don't want guns.
Well, then you probably need to be in a home.
You're right.
Because you can't defend freedom. You know, when the jackbooted government comes along and puts its jackboots down on your freedom-loving neck right next to your tattoo that says, "Only God can judge me."
Or in a FEMA concentration camp because he's now supporting the Second Amendment.
There you go. Meanwhile, Brother Usher Steve in New York says, "I have an idea. They don't want to pee with trans folks. How about we build them fundamentalist, upstanding Christianist bathrooms? They can piss together till their hearts are content." But see, well, they probably wouldn't like being separate but equal, would they? Or would they?
They should just start putting Johnny on the spot porta potties in front of stores with a sign on it that says "for bigots."
Yeah, or Christian bigots. Because I'm not seeing a lot of protest out of anything but the evangelical community.
That is true.
That's a very good point. I didn't even think about that. You don't hear it from the Jewish or even the Muslim point of view saying anything about this.
No, I missed the press release from Hindus against trans people. Jainists against the Johns. Yeah, I mean, what? Oh, by the way, thanks go out to Steve. For kicking in on Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. Thank you very kindly, Steve. That's a nice start. 175 to go. 175. Okay. And
come on, people, support Bob. Support the show. 175 to go.
Oh, that rhymed. Thank you very much. Let's see. Billable Rick is with us this evening, I think.
He stepped away.
He might be, and he might not. It's boss's birthday, and they're having cake or something.
Chocolate cake.
Ooh.
That looks so good.
I think I just felt my blood sugar go up.
I want some chocolate cake. Ooh.
That would be nice, or, you know, just, yeah, with me.
With ice cream?
When you, oh, stop it. You're just making things worse. Although this weekend, the plan is, I'm going to smoke up some ribs, and we're going to go over to our daughter and son-in-law's home and, the grandbabies. But while there, I'll probably have to crush and snort up a couple of metformins just to, to balance things. But we're going to get out the ice cream machine.
Ooh.
And make orange pineapple ice cream.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Is it an electric one?
Yes.
Or a crane?
No, it's electric. I'm cheating my grandchildren out of the out of the glories of cranking an ice cream freezer.
Yeah, we used to have one of those. We used it when I was a kid and go camp, and we had to crank the damn ice cream maker.
Yeah, I'm killing the planet. never mind all those coal mines. Never mind. No. That's it's on me.
Well, we were out in the middle of nowhere with no electricity.
Well, I bought this a couple of years ago, and frankly, they didn't have one that you cranked, because I kind of wanted a manual ice cream freezer because I wanted my grandchildren to have that experience. But no.
I wonder if you can order one.
Oh, sure you can. Everything's available on the interweb tubes. Or I could just ask Tracy if she could kindly lend me hers there, where you have to freeze the bowl and stuff.
Where's Tracy? I don't know where she's at right now.
Well, I haven't got any messages from her, so she's not
inside. Tracy, hurry up.
Nobody listening.
I feel so much safer now in L.A., California.
Well, you have a right to. And I don't know. Did you see the story, Tim? There's a federal database of, people who commit crime. Well, the the NRA's latest hissy is that the state of Hawaii will now know, they've joined in a database, and if a gun owner from Hawaii commits a crime in one of the other 49 states, Hawaii will be notified.
Oh, cool.
And the NRA is pissed. Oh, by the way, you may be interested. Steve just sent me a copy of the official gay agenda.
Ooh.
Yeah, he says, I sneaked this out of a meeting and have turned it over to Brother Liquor Supply Officer Marion Robertson. Official gay, all caps, official gay agenda for your eyes only, in no specific order. Do not distribute. Well, there goes that. One. Go to work every day. Two, pay taxes. Three, marry if desired. Four, cook meals when necessary. Five, join a gym if affordable. Six, see doctor, dentist on a regular basis. Seven, mow lawn as necessary. Eight, go to synagogue, church, or other house of worship. Feel free not to believe. Nine, have children. 10, join the PTA or other boring parental group. Damn, there it is. Somehow that seems a lot less exciting than the gay agenda. That lives in the fetid fever swamp, sort of the nasty spider webby spaces between the ears of, right wingers like Laura Ingraham. And
we're all gay then, after all.
Kinda, yeah. Because we're all human. All gays are humans. Yeah. All humans are gay.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay.
Wow.
Steve from Georgistan is with us this evening. Good evening, Steve.
Good evening, Mr. Bob. How are you?
I'm just dandy. You know, it always does my heart good to see your avatar.
Can't beat early, can you?
Early Kyler, no. Yeah. Every now and then, Ferg and I will be talking. For some reason or other, he'll say, Daddy! And I looked at him earlier today. I said, I just realized why I hate it when you do that. He said, why is that?
Daddy!
I said, because that pretty much makes you Rusty Kyler. And he
hey, Bob,
and he looked at me and said, I will never do it again.
To get nostalgic, I know you're an All in the Family fan, aren't you?
Oh, yes.
Do you remember the op-ed Archie did for Gun Control? That was hilarious. He said there was a lot of hijackings going on back then. He said, well, the answer is pass out pistols before everybody gets on the plane and then collect them when they get off. Do you remember that episode?
I remember that instance. And, you know, back then, people laughed at that.
Yeah. Well, it sounds familiar now, doesn't it?
But now it's policy.
Yeah. Well, I just posted a link in your chat room to it in case anybody wants to see it on the YouTubes.
Oh, hang on. This might be. This is okay. This is worth the interruption. Here, let's share. Because it's, you know, it's show and tell time on Friday on the front porch. Here we go.
Here we are. All right, everybody, clam up.
Mr. Archie Bunker, speaking in reply to the editorial broadcast last Saturday.
Good evening, everybody. This is Archie Bunker of 704 Hauser Street, veteran of the Big War, speaking on behalf of Guns for Everybody. Now, question.
Okay, where'd the audio go? That certainly isn't. Try it again.
Here we are. All right, everybody, clam up.
Look what they did to me. Mr. Archie Bunker, speaking in reply to the editorial broadcast last Saturday.
Good evening, everybody. This is Archie Bunker of 704 Hauser Street, veteran of the Big War, speaking on behalf of Guns for Everybody. Now, question. What was the first thing that the communists done when they took over Russia? Answer, gun control. And there's a lot of people in this country who want to do the same thing to us here in a kind of conspiracy, see. You take your big international bankers, they want to, masticate the people of this here nation like puppets on a wing. And then when they get that done, they turn us over to the communists. Now, I want to talk about another thing that's on everybody's mind today, and that's your stick-ups and your skyjackers, which, if that was up to me, I could end the skyjackers tomorrow.
You could?
All you got to do is arm all your passengers. He ain't got no more superiority there. He ain't going to dare to pull out no rod. And then your airlines, then they wouldn't have to chase the passengers on the ground no more. They just pass out the pistols at the beginning of the trip, and they pick them up again at the end. Case closed.
That was satire back then. Now it's a reality.
Yeah.
That's what we've come to.
But you know, there's another little piece of anthropological, sociological evidence in there too, Steve. And that is this. At the beginning, he says, what did you communists do when they took over? They took away everybody, they gun control. They took away everybody's guns. Now, it wasn't 2 weeks ago that as Ferg and I sat in an IHOP in Beckley, I'd picked him up from work. And he was starving. And an individual sitting next to us said, what did Hitler do? 735. Who had 735? The first thing he did is he took away everybody's guns. And, you know, I try to be a decent soul. I try not to just go out there looking at it. And I just looked over and said, with all due respect, that is simply not true. He did not disarm the German population. He wanted a population that was good with guns because he was planning on invading the entire European continent. It did not happen. You can look it up. It is not true. That's one of those things that the NRA and Fox News put out there, and people just believe wholesale.
Also, didn't it with after the Second War, I guess World War One, I should say, wasn't there a treaty or something that they couldn't have any kind of weapons
or any kind of army or anything like that?
No, there was a treaty that demilitarized Germany.
Right.
But it did not speak to the individual ownership of firearms.
That's true.
But, you know, again, this is, I mean, what year is this? 1972, 1973, 74? And back then, it's a joke. It's a laugh line. Remember?
Yes.
All in the Family is recorded before a live studio audience. Those are real human beings laughing at that.
Yes. Now they're voting for it.
Yeah, now they think that if dark movie theaters and dance clubs with strobe lights, black lights, and mirror balls just had more people with guns in them, well, our mass murder problem would be over.
Well, Bob, they just changed boogeymans is all they done. Back in the 70s, it was the commies that was going to give us. In fact, the independent fundamental premillennial Baptist church that I was forced to go to showed a film called If the Footman Tired, What Will the Horseman Do? And they swore emphatically that we only had 24 months to live unless we changed their evil ways. And I mean, this film was grotesque. It would have made Herschel Gordon Lewis proud. The special effects were just so hideous. And I could post a trailer of that in the chat room, if you know, but you don't have to play it on air, but just give people a feel of what we were up against back then.
Well, and you know, you mentioned the independent premillennial Baptist church you attended. Did you ever get to see a movie called The Burning Hell?
No, sir, I can't recall it.
Oh, that was a dandy. They showed that three nights running at my Baptist church. And it was, you know, it was a horror movie of sorts. I mean, it showed all these people who never imagined they were going to hell because they were good people. And then, ooh, you know, they're turning into crispy critters in amongst the flames.
Well, this is a horror movie, basically. I mean, the special effects are so bad and so horrible. I mean, just check out the trailer when you're in your spare time, and you'll see.
Yeah, but the thing is, Steve, it worked.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know. Well,
it worked me. They asked me why I drink. You know, geez.
going for the 1.75 liter these days, are we, Steve?
Yeah, Bob. Yeah, in fact, Miss Karen's been getting on me about it. I got to slow down a bit, but you know, it is what it is, man.
Well, yeah, my church is boring then.
Oh, you're not. No, no, you're not. And you probably don't have the really awesome punch either.
Oh, they do have punch.
But No. Not the Baptist wedding punch with the Hawaiian punch, fruit juicy red, the ginger ale, and the melting rainbow sherbet. I imagine the melting rainbow sherbet has since been banned in the Southern Baptist Convention. You know,
don't
being rainbow and all. Now, yeah, but nobody eats the butter mints.
What's a butter mint?
Wait a second. I did. That probably explains a lot.
Not good for you.
What's a butter mint?
It's a candy.
So something Bob talks about every Wednesday.
It's a sugar-based candy that's got a hint of butter flavor and a little bit of mint in it.
Oh.
Because the church that I had when I was little, that's what they had. It was buttermints. And every time you say that, I always go back to that time of buttermints. We used to eat buttermints all the time at church.
Well, it's like the email I got one time from our buddy Dr. Allen down in Texas. He said, every prayer meeting Wednesday, when you say, with every head bowed and every eye closed, he said, it just transports me in time to the awful Baptist church I was raised in. Because they all operate from the same script. They learn the same crap at the same school of, you know, Southern Baptist theology. And that's, you know, that's where a lot of that stuff comes from.
and they had these awful catchphrases like, I'm going to preach till the cows come home and I don't even have any cows. And they would just drone on for hours and hours and hours.
Well,
Bob, if you don't mind me asking, were you born and raised as a Southern Baptist as well? Or?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So you know what I'm speaking of.
I've said in the past, Steve, the first time I was ever scared by a man screaming was the preacher at that Baptist church.
Oh, yeah. They would get into a frenzy and ha, 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 and just...
Yeah, not even the hacking, but just the pulpit pounding, screaming, and I'm wondering, you know, why is he so angry? We're all friends here.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a place of love and understanding. What am I missing? 10 years old, you know?
Oh no, I mean I'm like four.
Yeah, okay.
I mean it was awful.
The thing that always freaked me out is when they would have the people come up. And have the people, I guess, witness or whatever they were doing, and they start shaking and falling on the ground. That's a lot to take in for a 5-year-old.
And flopping around like fish, yeah, I've been there.
No, we were respectable. We didn't flop, but what we could do, I mean, you couldn't get rebaptized because, you know, once saved, always saved. But you could recommit your life to Christ Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes people would come up and do that if the altar call was running slow. And after a while, I began wondering, it sort of dawned on me that there weren't that many people getting saved. You know, just
and
any...
I'm sorry, Bob, and I always thought in my young mind, saved, saved from what?
Oh, there was no question in my mind. Yeah, saved from eternal damnation in a very hot burning hell. Hey, let me just a minute. We got somebody on the stress line joining in the conversation. Hey, welcome aboard.
What is a stress line? This is Richard in Eastern Tennessee.
You're on the stress line, Richard.
What does that mean? I'm on the phone.
Yeah, you're on the stress line. You've been away for a while, but it's named in memory of our dear departed friend Bill Mr. Stress Miller.
Oh, yes, I remember Bill, yes. Okay, got it.
So,
well, that's me. Here I am in southeastern Tennessee. You conjured me with talking about Baptist churches.
I didn't know you were raised Baptist, Richard.
No, I was. I was raised atheist. But here I am, you know, coming here from California, it's really strange for me. I mean, I was raised in New York City. I'm not used to this, but what I did was I counted the Baptist churches around here. Now, I lived in California for 43 years, and California has very large counties, and so the whole state has only about 23 counties. Here, where I am in Tennessee, the counties are normal eastern size, little counties. And so there's, in the newspaper, there's a listing of all the churches for two counties. And I counted 167 Baptist, wait a minute, no, 217 Baptist churches in just these two little counties here. And I'm thinking, coming in from California, I'm going, where are all the people, you know? I mean, is every second person here a minister or what? I don't get it. What am I missing?
Well, I mean, it's... now maybe you have a better conception, Richard, of why I call it the religion industry.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not just Baptists. I mean, depending on where you are, you're kind of in the beating heart of Church of Christ territory too.
Yes.
And I'm not talking about those liberal United Churches of Christ types. These are some big haired weirdos. I mean they won't even sing to so much as a kazoo accompanying them.
Well, I find, you know, every place I go, there's there's at least one church on the on every street corner. It's I'm just not used to seeing churches all over the place. I mean,
Wait, you said you've been there since September. Has nobody invited you to attend one yet?
I have been invited, yes. I declined gracefully.
Well, you're going to hell.
You bet I am. I think the music is better there.
Well, it depends. It depends, but it's certainly you don't go to a Church of Christ for the music. It sounds like a cat killing.
Well, if Anita Bryant is in heaven, I'm going the other place.
Well, she's in her own personal, private heaven, you know. You know, where the one where there's nothing but orange juice and no gay people.
Yeah.
Now you make me want to. Now you've made me go and look up Anita Bryant. Dear God, she's not in hell yet. She's still alive.
The orange juice lady that got the pie in the face? Yeah, I remember her.
Yep, born March 25th, 1940.
Still kicking.
Yep, still out there hating.
She's still a spring chicken.
Let's see. Yeah, there's the picture of her. October 14th, 1977. She got a pie in the face.
I remember that well. Bob, if
like
you think...
Time...
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's like the time Newt Gingrich got that glitter bomb. Does anybody remember that?
That activist do that glitter all over him?
Oh, that... by 1980, she said, I'm more inclined to say live and let live, just don't flaunt it or try to legalize it.
And Bob, if you think I'm bitter, Karen, my wife, her dad thinks the Southern Baptists were too liberal. He's an independent, fundamental, premillennial Baptist minister, and they haven't spoken in 10 years. I mean, that's how wedging, for lack of a better word, that this kind of environment can be. You know, he drug her to church so many times, she never wants to step foot in an institution like that again. And I don't blame her.
Well, no, that's why I use the phrase when I talk about it, Steve, that I am I'm a recovering Southern Baptist.
Understood.
And you never get well. You're never fully healed. By the way, we have an observation coming from our buddy Michael in Madison in regard to Ralph Peters.
Ralph Peters.
Yeah, he's the guy. Oh, it's a disgrace that the Army's not going to court-martial people for being trans. It's disgusting. Michael in Madison writes, has it been pointed out that the name Ralph Peters can be interpreted as a verb and a noun, plural, as vomit dicks? Sacrifice another whoopee cushion for the goddess of irony, for she is good and good for you. Henceforward, any clips involving Ralph Peters will now be referred to, he will now be referred to as vomit dicks. I personally hope it sticks. Vomit dicks. Oh, and a rhyme, too. The goddess of irony is especially good this evening. No, you were going to say something, Trey? Or not? Jules has joined us. Good evening, Jules.
Well, good evening. How are you?
I think we're all just doing dandy.
Very good, very good. I'm glad. That makes me happy. Yeah, we've had an interesting week. Brexit and Clinton and Warren going out on the road, and we've got Trump going around, and I mean, right next door to me here in Ohio, you know, and Trump here in Indiana talking to Pence, and hey, that might be kind of good, get Pence out of Indiana, and so he won't be running for governor, maybe, you know.
Oh, nice. You're engaging in wishful thinking now.
Oh, I know that I am engaging in awful wishful thinking. Oh my gosh, what am I doing? That's being too hopeful, you know. You know how ungodly.
Is Mike Helmet Hair Pence up for re-election this year?
Yes.
And the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, fundamentalist, evangelical, amosexual people of Talibandiana will happily re-elect him, won't they?
Oh, good God, you know.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping North Carolina comes to its senses.
Oh, dear Lord, you would think so.
But Talibandiana, I'm sorry, Jules. I hold out no hope whatsoever.
No, neither do I. Never, never, ever, 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 ever. I wouldn't. Absolutely wouldn't. Because, you know, I mean, the people around here are just full of stupidity. Well, we did, get Bernie through for, we didn't vote Hillary, so... Hey, we did something.
Yeah, but that's
right.
Just the tiny minority of Talibandianans who are, you know, not Republicans. It's not like Talibandiana is going to go for the Democrat. It's,
you know. Well, yeah, I mean, if it would have been voting for between the Republicans and the Democrat, the Republicans like way outvoted the Democrats. I mean, in the election, so I mean, there were like twice as many Republicans that voted.
Right, and Talibandiana was the state that broke Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed booger-eating future king of America's back.
Yeah, that's true.
So I guess there's something good to be said for them.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
Hey, Jules, who's running against Pence? Who's the Democrat running against him?
Pardon?
Who's running against Pence?
Is there anybody specific that you know?
You know, I cannot think who it is right offhand, to be honest with you. Let me see here.
Some pathetic, hopelessly underfunded Democrat who doesn't have a rat's chance in hell.
That's true.
I mean, that's kind of like being the Democratic nominee for governor in Talibama.
Yeah. Basically, yeah, I'm not, I know I saw it, but I'm not exactly sure who it was.
So it would seem that this is a good time to bring up the issue of the DNC email hack. Are we following that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Thoughts?
Is that guy Guccifer?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I saw something on the news about that. I take what he says with a grain of salt.
Well,
I mean, yeah, maybe he did hack in, but
there's. So I mean, do you think this email is not real?
No, I'm just thinking that if you want it done right, you get. WikiLeaks, or the guy over in Russia, Snowden.
But I thought WikiLeaks had their emails, all 43,000 of them.
I don't know.
These are internal DNC emails, Tim. To the Democratic National Committee, 2016 GOP presidential candidates. Date, May 26th, 2015. And blah, 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 blah. And then you get down to paragraph enumerated 3. Use specific hits to muddy the waters around ethics, transparency, and campaign finance attacks on HRC. Now, see, there's not in there about Bernie or anything, but as far back as May 26, 2015, the DNC was simply assuming Hillary would be the nominee, and they were, and what I find more interesting out of that line is that they were acknowledging that she had transparency, ethics, and campaign finance problems.
Okay, wait a minute. Who was this email from, and who was it to?
The to line is to the Democratic National Committee.
So what was it like in anticipation of what the DNC might face and what HRC might face in the actual election?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Punky says hello, but he's going
to
go.
I was going to say hi to Punky. Well, Punky.
I forgot to put him in the bathroom so he could visit with his little birdie friend in the mirror.
Yeah, yeah, hey, Scott, would you like some chocolate cake by chance?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Would you like some chocolate cake?
Chocolate? He's not a real big cake eater, but he likes, whenever I open up a bag of Chex Mix, he's right over onto my shoulder to, you know, get a... He doesn't like the bagel chips, but he likes the white rice Chex, wheat Chex, and corn Chex. And I give him a bite every now and again.
Yeah, no, I think chocolate's usually not so good for animals, you know?
No, I know it's not for cats and dogs.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's where you say goody, more for us.
I'd say probably not for birds either. Just a quick word. Pence is upside down in the polls, actually, and he's in a close race against a gentleman named the last name is Greg. So, we may actually get a Democratic governor. So,
that's well.
Speaking of races, political races, I meant to pass this along, and I'm not in the chat room because I have an Apple product, so. I'm not compatible with the chat room, but there's a website called electoral-vote.com, and every 2 or 4 years, depending on which election it is, they give current and frequently updated polling information about the presidential race. Well, they've been doing about the primary, but soon they'll get into the actual presidential race polling and also the Senate. And then in the last couple of months, I think they even look at probabilities for the individual House races. But it's called electoral-vote.com, and it's a pretty nifty website, and it's a nice alternative to Nate Silver, who I don't like because I think he's snotty.
Yeah, but are they as right as Nate Silver is?
Well, I've been using this website for several election cycles, and they're pretty good. I think they use a different technology, but they're pretty good. I'm looking to see. I see Senate races, but I don't see gubernatorial. They even include those, I think.
Nate's been pretty accurate in the past.
Oh, and by the way, we have two Scots in the room right now.
Oh, Lord.
San Diego Scott, and I guess you're going to be, are you Vermont Scott?
Hi, yeah, that would be me.
Okay.
Well, he and I may be having the same deja vu and or out-of-body experience. It could be either of those.
Oh, great Scott.
Which one?
Great many Scots.
Electoral-vote.com.
Electoral-vote.com.
Okay, thank you.
Show. I live to serve.
Oh, by the way, Michael and Madison Thomas over at FYINation.com said, I never liked Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Peters. So I'm especially happy to see this new name for him. Praise be! Hashtag vomit dicks. It's dicks, not dick. Peters. Dicks. Peters. Yeah, okay. By the way, I had a note from Brother Usher Steve. He says, Had to drop off, grabbing a beer with a friend, so I had to step away. However, just want you to want to relay to everyone to have a great 4th of July holiday weekend. And this is serious and sincere. I love you all, and you mean a whole lot to me. Joy and peace to you all, especially all my best to my hillbilly brothers and sisters. Hang in there. You're tough as shit. No.
I'm a hillbilly?
No, Steve. We're not tough as shit. When it comes to Appalachia, it's just tough shit.
That's right. Well, love back to
this is Richard. I just want to say goodbye to everybody. Have a great weekend. My battery's dying, and I'm going to go free up the phone line.
Okay. Well, Richard, have yourself a wonderful weekend and a happy Independence Day to you, and I look forward to hearing from you again now that you're kind of settled in and stuff.
Okay. Yes, thanks a lot.
You have a good evening.
Bye now.
Have a good weekend. Bye-bye.
Our buddy,
hey, Bob.
Our buddy Richard calling from, now Tennistan. Yes. Who bobbed me? Yes.
That's me, Steve from Georgistan. Last week we were talking about gerrymandering. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correct.
You are.
Okay. And why the Republicans controlled the House. Well, I crunched some numbers just for Georgistan. Okay. In the 2012 election, Mitt got 53% of the vote. Obama got 45% of the vote, but Georgistan only has four Democrat representatives in the House compared to the Thugs, who have 10. Now, what is wrong with the math here?
Well, it's the difference being that, you know, Obama is a statewide, a presidential election is a statewide election.
But it seems like there ought to be more of an equal representation, which the point I was trying to make last week was they ought to divide these districts out based more on population equally with a computer or something than to have some knucklehead just draw them out however he wants to slant it in their favor.
Well, I mean, there is a mathematical component to it, Steve. But the art of gerrymandering is such that you're supposed to, you know, according to the Constitution, you're supposed to have one man, one vote. So, you know, you couldn't have one district with 5 million people in it and another district with, you know, 10,000. So what they'll do instead is they, especially when Republicans are in power, they draw the districts so that they dilute the vote of people who could be harmful to them. I saw a representation of a district in Florida the other day, and it looked like nothing so much as a water moccasin hanging from a tree limb. I mean, the damn thing couldn't have been 20 miles wide, but it was 300 miles long.
Right, well, I just posted a map in the chat room. Check it out, the way that it just snakes up from South Georgia all the way into Central Georgia. And granted, they have about 717,000 per district, but it's the way that they chop it up, which is unfair, and it's why the deck is stacked against whoever, you know, draws this up. If that makes any sense.
The deck is stacked in favor of the incumbent party.
That's right. Whoever, yeah, scratch that, reverse it. I misspoke. The deck is in favor of whoever draws it up. Obviously.
Hi, this is Scott Vermont VT Blom in the chat, but that's and yeah, the Florida district you spoke of is right next door to me, and you're right. It's only about 5 miles wide at some points. But it goes all the way from the Georgia border all the way down just above me, which is 100 miles.
And it's not that way by accident.
No, it was drawn by the Republicans after the 2010 census.
And my point is, with the technology we have today, there has to be a more fair way to do it, but they don't want to do it. They want to stack the deck.
Well, fairness has precisely zero to do with it.
That's the point.
Well, go ahead. It's all about stacking the deck, and I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead, sir.
That's all right.
I interrupted you, actually, let the record reflect. But it really, in a way, it's all about, I think the last time I checked, and this is updated every 10 years because of the census, I believe, but each congressional district, of which we have 435 of them, has about 700,000 people, okay? What is to prevent us from saying, no, wait a minute, that's an awful lot of people for one House representative to represent. Why not just cut down the number of people in districts by making more districts?
Well, why not double the number of House of Representatives members?
Well, that's what I mean, because that would be the net effect. If you made the district smaller,
God Almighty, can you imagine a House of Representatives with 1,060 members?
Well, let's face it, they wouldn't be able to. They wouldn't be able to do much worse than the current configuration of 435.
Yeah, but the current configuration is only as awful as it is because of who and what they are. What you're talking about is the same remedy that FDR was considering when he wanted to pack the court.
Yeah, well, I was kind of thinking along those lines.
Well, I think the overall consensus in the roundtable here tonight is there has to be a better way.
Well, California has already done that in the sense that we have a nonpartisan board of people who draw our districts here. And it works out rather nicely. Things actually get done. Hell, the way the current House of Representatives is, you couldn't get that group of numbskulls to agree on a lunch order.
Exactly. Which it's like Morrison said, you know, they got the guns, but we got the numbers. We do.
Yeah, but you got to understand, it didn't happen overnight. You've got the gutting of the Voting Rights Act, which said that redistricting had to be passed through the U.S. Department of Justice. Well, that's over now. It was called preclearance. And so, you know, these Republican state legislatures are hell-bent on making sure that, because understand, they can't, it's not that they can't do anything in their current configuration, they won't do anything. Why won't they do anything? Because they don't believe in the idea of government to begin with.
Hey, Bob?
Yeah.
They're not doing anything because what's working now is working for them.
Right. I mean, there's I got a story right in front of me here. It's out of Ohio. A federal judge, a U.S. District Court judge in Columbus, has agreed with the Republican administration of the state of Ohio, and has upheld Ohio's voter purge from the rolls. The state has deemed them to be inactive voters, and the U.S. District Judge said, sure, go ahead. Now, it is not an accident that both the governor and the Secretary of State of Ohio are, come on, Republicans.
Republicans.
And in the last 5 years, Ohio has purged something around 2 million people for doing nothing more than not voting in the last three elections.
That's criminal.
That's legal.
Well, in fairness, though, some of the onus needs to fall on the people who can't be bothered to fucking vote. That was my rant a couple of weeks ago. You get out and you exercise your franchise every 2 or 4 years. Every time you've got an opportunity to do it, by God, get up and do it. And in the states where you can do it by mail, like we have here in California, there's no excuse. I mean, there are no excuses.
Yeah, but Scott,
there are a lot of...
Scott, at what cost? Okay? I'm not being mean or anything, but everywhere ain't California.
Yeah,
okay?
But...
No, I mean, wait, hear me out, please.
All right.
Let's say you live in a majority-minority district. And let's say that maybe the week before the election, you get an anonymous mailer that purports to be from some law enforcement agency that says, do you have a traffic ticket? Do you have an outstanding speeding ticket? Are you late on your child support payments? Well, if you go and if you try to go and vote, you can expect to be arrested at the polls. Now, it's easy for you or me to say, well, that's a load of bullshit. But are you really going to take that chance? You know, the I remember a few years back when good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, white-wing Republicans were planning to stand outside minority-majority polling places and demand to see voter credentials. And see, when they do these things, there's not a goddamn thing you can do about them, because you call the Secretary of State's office, and the Secretary of State's office says, well, they'll certainly investigate that. I mean, what was it, New Hampshire? You might remember this, Scott. In New Hampshire, a few years ago, one of those Republican POSs was caught stone-cold busted, dirty tricking the Democratic campaign. It was the first time Gene Shaheen ran, I think. And, I mean, there wasn't any question. And a few years later, you know, everything was proven to be true that was alleged, but that didn't change the electoral outcome. There's no penalty. It's okay. Voting by mail is easy, but guess what? If you've still got to go and stand in a line, and if your polling place has two voting booths, whereas the white precinct 2 miles away has 15, and you're getting paid minimum wage, and you are losing money to stand there in line and vote. I mean, do you see what I'm getting at, Scott?
Yeah, I do, but in today's world, two things. First of all, in today's world, with the access that we have to good information, if we're willing to look online or somewhere to find it, those scams are easily deflated, okay? Those voter intimidation scams, that kind of thing. The other thing is, I'm old enough to remember Bull Connor and the police dogs and the fire hoses. Until voting, attempts to quell voting take the form of police dogs and fire hoses, I don't know that anybody has an excuse, and I'm not going to enable them in my rhetoric or in my speaking to cop out simply because there are assholes around who don't want to see them vote. That's the problem. If we're easily intimidated, then we get the results that naturally occur arising from being intimidated easily. Okay? That's all I'm saying, really.
No, I understand. But so your minimum wage job, you're going to lose $17.50 out of that you can't afford to lose standing in line to vote. And then when you vote, you have no way of knowing that your vote's actually going to be counted. I mean, I don't disagree with anything you're saying, Scott. But I think we've got to recognize the reality.
Yeah, and I do get what you're saying. I just, maybe it's my 60s mentality that I don't take no or you can't as an answer very easily.
And you know what? It would be a lot more energizing if Bull Connor's dogs and fire hoses were out there. This is soft disenfranchisement. Hell, saw soft disenfranchisement going on during the primary with all the vicious hilarians out there saying, she's already won. Why are you bothering to vote?
Yeah.
And Scott, you've got one thing to remember is that the voter disenfranchisement, if you want to call it that, has already happened. You show up at the polls and you're not registered to vote. You've already spent 2 hours standing in line, and you are not a registered voter.
Yeah.
And the most you can do is cast
that.
A provision.
It had nothing to do with whatever your intent was, whatever your job is, or anything else. You stood there for 2 hours, and you get up there, and they say, oh, sorry, you're not in the roll.
Here's your provisional ballot that we probably won't count.
Right, maybe.
Provisional ballot, you might as well be writing on a cocktail napkin. Let's be real about it.
Well, that's true.
I don't disagree that because the stakes for these obstructionists and let's just call them as they are, Republicans, the stakes are so high for them to remain in power and in control that they will say and do anything to keep that equation from changing. I acknowledge that fully. But I'm more of a solutions person than I am a problem. Yeah, granted, you've got to understand the problem to find the solution. But once you get a firm grasp of the problem, then you can explore opportunities for workarounds. And the biggest workaround to me is to vote every time that you can, because then they can't say that you're an inactive voter, okay? And you look at the hell that people have gone through over history to get that franchise in this country. To me, it's a slap in their collective faces to slough it off, okay? Because I'm pissing on their efforts in history, and I'm also cutting my own foot off because I'm not getting out and being part of the solution instead of the part of the problem. Again, the 60s mentality.
I get that. And see, hey, if you don't mind, I think we've got Snork over on the stress line. Is that you, Snork?
Yes, it is.
Welcome on.
Hey there, Snork.
Oh, I didn't want to interrupt that chain of thought.
I had to break into it somewhere along the way to get you on, so that was as good a time as any.
Okay, I still had lingering comments from way back with the automatic trucks. The plan is Mercedes is testing them now in Nevada. They can drive from one border to the other border of Nevada automatically with no driver in the cab. And if they have a problem, they pull over to the side of the road and phone home, where a remote driver can take over and manipulate them to a point of safety or park them somewhere.
Yeah, kind of drone-like.
Right. Eventually, the American drivers will be removed, and they will be remote-driven from India. We currently have about 3 million people employed in the trucking industry who will be unemployed, and now even trucking jobs can be offshored.
Wow, wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it be great if all those truckers had a union to try to help protect their jobs?
Right. This can also be done with cabs. So Uber is only temporary. Pretty soon we'll have India Uber.
See, it's reports like that that make me miss Jimmy Hoffa. As bad as he was, at least he took care of the Teamsters.
Yes. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, in spite of supporting this technology, has gotten the backing of the Teamsters, which is extraordinary to me. Or the Florida Teamsters. This will be part of the TPP. Once the TPP goes, the drivers can be anywhere.
Kind of hard to picket a bunch of guys in Bangalore, isn't it?
Well, there's going to be a whole bunch of issues, including insurance people. What about getting a ticket? Who gets the ticket, and what jurisdiction are they in?
Well, I mean, theoretically, the ticket will be impossible because they won't exceed the speed limit and they won't drive erratically.
Well, in court, you can't prove who was the driver. So the officer won't be able to reach up and take somebody's license. Inside the room, they could say, well, somebody was logged in with my name. So it's not possible for any ticket, any anything to stick in court with a remote driver, or at least with our current level of technology. And most cars now made after 1996 all contain what's called either a CAN bus or a LIN bus or both, which is a computer system that basically controls everything. Many of the signals now in cars, every switch and everything, doesn't actually just flip a wire. It's actually a one wire that goes around the entire car, or one wire system that goes around the entire car, and each of the devices can recognize itself to turn signal on or off. It's a distributed control system.
Yeah, Devin just asked a trenchant question. Can you imagine when that ISIL remote driver puts a gasoline tanker through a hospital?
Oh, yeah. This brings a lot of issues to the forefront, and that is a scary one.
Well, it is indeed. Hey, let me take a minute here, 22 minutes past the hour, to note that we still have, and, you know, I hate to pass up opportunities like this, we have Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge on the table this evening. That's $200 that will double that'll double $200 that come in. So it would be great if that was not just sort of left to lie fallow. Just, you know, saying. And, you know, not going in. Oh, by the way, program announcement. Unless something dramatic happens, I see no reason that I won't be on the air Monday night. It's 4th of July night, but our big fun will be happening on Sunday.
Malloy's taking off tonight and Monday.
Oh, well. Probably going to see the kids and grandkids.
Yeah, Mike said something last night about I didn't get the dates involved, but that he was going to be away and that Bob was going to be filling in. I kind of got the impression it was a little ways down the road, though.
Yeah, I imagine they both sort of assumed that we'd be doing something on the 4th, too, so.
Bob, we're going to be broadcasting on the 4th also, from 9 to midnight, so.
You know, I had a thought for all of the people who are in my position as far as computers go with an Apple product, because it's like jumping through flaming hoops to use the Horn chat room.
Do you have an iPad?
Well, yeah, I do, but I don't. I would much rather use my laptop for purposes of chatting.
Because I know Tim knows how to make an iPad work.
But anyway, the thing I was getting at was, I wonder if Malloy would mind if we used his chat room during Bob's show, because I can get in there with no
problem.
Well,
but that's been discussed. But we lose all the emoticons and all of that stuff, and it seems not to be a popular idea.
Oh, okay. Well, we Mac owners have been dealing with that shit since '84. There's far less software, or used to be far less software, Windows versus Mac. So,
well, this is just a Java thing. Java is apparently toxic. I mean, you know, Java is very, very susceptible to hacks and malware and stuff like that. And
yeah,
I don't blame Apple a dime's worth for saying no, we're not going to have anything to do with it.
Yeah.
All the rest Windows and everybody else are doing away with Java as we speak.
I think the other day, a couple of weeks ago, Jules said that if I use Firefox, is that the name of the browser?
That's the browser.
that if I use that even on a Mac and have Java installed, that I can get into Bob's chat room, but I haven't tried it yet.
Yeah, Firefox is the last browser that supports Java.
The old,
that's what I've been using for years.
The old Internet Explorer also supports Java.
Yeah, but Microsoft doesn't support the old Internet Explorer anymore, so you can have problems there.
You can still use it. You can still use it. I've done it before.
It's there. So. It's there, but you have to. They're not going to support it anymore, so it will not be there eventually.
Yeah, I understand that, but it's there.
And Microsoft's pitches for me to upgrade machines to Windows 10 are beginning to take on a sort of a desperate tone. Oh, really? Well, are you sure? I mean, here it is. All you got to do is take it. I mean, come on, please.
It don't cost nothing.
It's been a nightmare for me, Bob. I mean, tread with caution, man, if you go there.
Oh, no, everything's
worked for me on both of my machines. I got on all three machines and no problems.
It just depends on what you've got. I mean, like I said, I don't dare put it on the streaming machine because it's such a memory pig. That machine doesn't have to do anything but send out the program, but that's a kind of important thing that it does.
That's important.
I've got it on two machines. One of them is a 64-bit system, and it works fine. On the 32-bit system, it sucketh.
Problem is, you're going to...
They're older machines, right?
The 32-bit system is, yeah, quite.
Yeah, because I have one that's 32. It works. It's no problem, but it's like a 2011 model Lenovo.
Well, about the worst thing that happened to me, it locked me out of my own computer. I signed up for Katina Office Assistant, and when I did that, it changed my login credentials and my password. So here I am, 2 in the morning, trying to call Microsoft, going through an automated system to get a security code to get my Hotmail address so I could get back into my own computer. But my password was stored on my computer in a password program. I didn't know what it is. So, I mean, you can run into these things if you're not careful. That's all I'm saying is tread with caution.
Yeah, see, I've been running 10 now for a year, and on three different machines. It works good. You can set it up so that it's not a memory hog. Actually, I find it much less memory intensive than,
I get into trouble simply because I tend to have 9 dozen tabs open on a browser.
Yeah, well, that'll hurt. But that'll hurt on any operating system. That's just, once you start getting, I work with Jules here, and she's got 9 tabs open, but she also has 3 browsers open.
And so 5 windows.
Yeah, right. I learned the hard way about multiple browsers. For some reason, on the 32-bit system, Firefox is what's stable, and that's what gets used.
Yeah, I run Firefox for all chats and everything because everybody is really Java intensive. So I'm a computer systems person. That's what I did for a living for the last 40 years. So a new topic. If anybody's interested,
jump right in.
I've got. I live here in Florida, and we've got the tide of death down here. We have a green algae bloom that has encompassed the west and east coast, and it's in fact now moved up to Georgia.
Oh, lovely. So the Atlantic and the Gulf Coast?
Yep. Gulf Coast is limited to just below Tampa, but the East Coast now I saw the satellite pictures from last night, yesterday, and it's all the way up to southern Georgia.
Jeez.
On New York Times website, I just noticed, I saw it on nightly news last night, but New York Times has got a big story that just popped up. Oozing green menace marches on Florida.
Well, it's been going on for about 3-4 months, but we have a absolutely bulletproof GOP government down here.
Yeah.
And they absolutely ignore it. They don't want to have anything to do with it.
Well, your environmental department is banned, and every other state department is banned from even mentioning sea level rise or climate change.
Correct.
Well, the Times on the front page slug line, the headline is "Oozing Green Menace Marches on Florida," and then the story begins: a reeking advance of algae in South Florida was created by competing environmental, residential, and agricultural interests, along with a failure to manage the demands of growth. And that pretty much sums it up.
I was going to ask, I know there was a similar problem, and basically throughout the Mediterranean basin, the Mediterranean Sea, with a similar type of water condition, like toxic algae, I think it was. Is that a little different? Is this the same thing, or is it a little bit different?
This is different because they back pump all of the water flow from Lake Okeechobee.
Oh, okay.
Which is the big giant, when you look at Florida, you see the big giant lake in the middle of the state.
Sure,
They drain that. When it gets too high, they drain it. And they just send it. It's supposed to, the original water flow would have gone south through the Everglades and sit there for 6 months, and it drains out. It's a swamp. It just drains.
But yeah, it filtrates and stuff. Yeah, exactly.
Right. But they have canals. They have drainage that's operated by the Corps of Engineers. So that's why everybody's blaming the federal government. It's not they have a dike, and there's millions of dollars worth of real estate that dike is protecting. And so they are under, orders to protect the homeowners and protect the land. And see, all of the land south of the lake, which is where the drainage used to go, is now owned by the sugar corporations. And that's all been artificially drained and turned into agriculture. So it can't go there. In fact, down there, they flood the sugar crops and then pump it back up into the lake.
And I know that the production of sugar in and of itself creates a whole toxic stew as well.
Oh, yeah. And it's what they do is they flood the sugar properties, which is somewhere around the order of, a million and a half, 2 million acres south of the lake. And then they flood it so that they clean it. And then they pump it back up into the canals, which then pumps it back up into the lake.
Wow.
So all of that stuff that's sitting there is now pumped back in, and then it sits in the lake. And then they pump it out and send it out to the Indian River, which is where I live on the East Coast, and out to the Arakuchiwachi or something. I don't know how to pronounce it. But they send it out to the West Coast.
Okay.
And they've got two huge canals that are built just for draining the lake.
I mean, by all rights, the entire southern half of Florida should not even be, inhabited.
Right. Well, they drain the swamp. They drain the Everglades.
Yeah, Right, right. And they wonder why there's a problem with the water table being so high when they, when you have extra, you know, excessive rain, or when you start digging down, you know, and then it gets all briny, you know?
Yeah, well, what it's already happening in Miami, they're starting to have salt infiltration in the aquifer.
Yeah. Yeah. And
we have very limited water supply. I mean, there's lots of water. We have a huge aquifer. It's the whole state. The whole state's made of coral. So, right. But we have the aquifer runs all the way from Georgia all the way to the Keys. But what happens is it's porous.
Yeah, it's like karst, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a, you know, big giant rock sponge. And
yeah.
Wow. And so when you start getting poisonous water floating around up on the surface, it drains down. And once it starts draining down, if the aquifer gets polluted, we're in trouble.
Wow.
Now I think it's safe to say Florida's already in trouble. Wouldn't you?
Well, yeah. Yeah, I live here.
By the way, I had a note from Robert in Australia. It's Saturday there, you know. And he said, that reminds me, I better go vote back in half an hour or so. Anyone tries to stop me getting into the local public school to vote is going to be told to fuck off. But it's Australia, so nobody will try to get him to keep him from getting into the local public because it's mandatory. Oh, what a lovely idea.
Speaking of Florida's woes and troubles, the other night I was on my Roku box, which is hooked up to the TV. I was watching an old episode of the PBS show Nova, and it was about Florida sinkholes. So the thing is, they may not have to wait for the water in the aquifer to get polluted. A sinkhole may open up and get them before that happens. It's like one thing right after another.
Oh, Jesus, I just saw a photograph of the algae, courtesy of Clarence, sent me a CNN link. The headline is, Toxic Algae Bloom Blankets Florida Beaches, Prompts State of Emergency. This is disgusting. It had to be, I mean, I guess these things just happen if you're, but... Governor Skeletor said, Martin, St. Lucie, Lee, and Palm Beach counties all have a state of emergency. And, yeah, it originated in Lake Okeechobee and spread to the beaches. Oh, well. Gee, I wonder if that algae does better in climate change situations. Do you reckon?
Well, the water levels in the lake definitely don't do better in climate change. We're 6 inches above normal for the first, you know, for 3 months of the rainy season. We haven't even hit our wet season yet.
Oh, that's going to be a blast.
And a side note, it's interesting that they've declared a state of emergency. And isn't it interesting also that they don't declare these states of emergency down there unless it involves threats to property or tourism dollars? Never mind the people, just ordinary Joe Blow.
And see, there's a quote in the CNN story that Clarence sent me from Earth Justice spokeswoman Elisa Coe. And let me just take a minute to say that Earth Justice is one of the best of the big greens. I saw ads for them in an airport somewhere. Earth Justice, because the Earth needs a good lawyer. And they really, really are good, caring people. And what Elisa Coe said to CNN is, the algae outbreaks are triggered by fertilizer, sewage, and manure pollution that the state has failed to properly regulate. It's like adding Miracle-Gro to the water, and it triggers massive algae outbreaks. We've seen this for years and years, and instead of addressing the problem, here we are on the 4th of July weekend with a state of emergency being declared. Usually, folks would be out fishing, swimming, and enjoying the beach with their families. Instead, they're left with water that is too toxic to touch because this shit is poisonous. Yeah. It can affect the gastrointestinal system, the liver, the nervous system, and the skin itself.
Well, the problem is just wait till it starts dying off. That's when it becomes really toxic. When it goes from green to blue, it becomes
absolutely toxic. I mean, can't we make like Soylent snacks out of it or something?
And it's, yeah, if you've got somebody you want to get rid of.
I bet you Snort could figure out how to turn it into something that's non-toxic that we could use.
I'll bet Snort could. You're absolutely right, Jules.
If you could get cars and trucks to run on it, there's your fortune right there. But it's not just Florida. A couple of years ago, I don't know what the current status is, but a couple of years ago, the Chesapeake Bay was dying off because of this agricultural runoff.
Right.
Up in the state of Maryland.
And if you get proactive about it, you've got a fighting chance.
Well, yeah, but Maryland's a blue state.
Right.
You better believe it.
And see, Ms. Coe went on and said, the state wants to pretend the problem's only about water storage, but it's also a pollution issue. In order to really get at the problem, you got to clean up the water. Anyone who's been watching the state of regulation in Florida saw this coming.
Yeah, we've been talking about this for 2 years, at least. That's the 2 years I've been paying attention to it, and it's just gotten worse. And with Tricky Rick there as the governor, and a completely Republican House and Senate, there's nothing anybody can do. They just refuse to pass anything. As you said before, they're not even allowed to talk about climate change.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, it
doesn't exist.
Isn't it kind of amazing that we can say that and everybody in the group doesn't just start howling? Instead, we go, well, yeah, of course. I mean, you know, naturally. I mean, we just accept it. That, you know, Florida's Republican government is so utterly, completely, and totally screwed that, yeah, I mean, of course it's that way.
They're killing us.
And the voters don't get it, because every 2 or 4 years they have an opportunity to get people in there who are willing and able to do something about these things. But the voters vote willingly against their own interests. Time after time, and nothing ever changes. You get the status quo.
And see, I'm beginning to wonder.
It goes back to the gerrymandering thing, though. It's down here. It's not one person, one vote.
No, it's one corporation, several million dollars worth of votes.
Right.
But you know, we in the wake of the Brexit vote, you know, we talked about the fact that idiots over in Texas stand began. Well, you know, this might be the time for a Texit. I'm beginning to wonder if maybe a Flexit might be in order. And we close the borders of Florida because, I mean, what non-scientifically influenced world is it okay to populate a delicate ecosystem like Florida like we have?
I live here not by choice. I was imported to take care of my parents. But the thing is, we've been yelling about it for years. Us on the green side, which I'm considered a commie liberal, and you know I'm against business and against you know everything. It's just I'm an environmental tree hugger. But I said,
commie.
You know, guys. You're going to die. You're going to die. It's Miami's going to be underwater in 10 years. And we've got to do something about it.
Well, you know, I mean, but the attitude is, well, you know, if that happens, we'll just do something engineering like, and, you know, maybe we'll build a wall around Florida. Maybe Trump will build a wall around Florida and we'll hold back the tides. Yeah, we can do that. Sure. That's
a whole lot of linear miles.
Well, you could bet your bottom dollar that if any of this green algae started creeping up on the shores of Mar-a-Lago or wherever that mansion is that Trump has down there, something would be done about it.
Oh, isn't it already there?
It's already there. It doesn't affect him. He's got bigger seawalls, and he can afford it.
Well, yeah, it's all tied.
Well, Rush Limbaugh's house.
Yeah. Hey, 14 minutes to go, and I need to send out some thank yous to Steve from Georgistan and Karen and Cletus, and to Michael in Madison too, for jumping in alongside Steve, who got us started. And with that in mind, that makes 135 bucks to go. 135 bucks to go on Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. And, you know, Shirley's got the stroke. She usually manages to get the job done. People respond well to that. And I should note that Michael in Madison, it's good to see a Wisconsin response to Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. Thank you. Laughter is mighty valuable around here. And, you know, Michael gave us, for Ralph Peters, Vomit Dicks. And if Thomas is listening, Thomas, you put the hockey puck in your mouth because this is going to hurt you. Other acceptable substitute monikers for Ralph Peters, according to Michael and Madison, include Puke Schlongs, Barf Wangs, Chuck Johnsons, and Spew Wieners. You don't get that quality just every day, so I'm kind of hoping that Ralph Peters says more stupid things just so we can put these things to work on the program real soon. Maybe I don't know. Maybe by Moran Monday, if the goddess of irony is feeling kindly toward us.
That's too good. That's just too rich.
Moran Monday on the 4th of July. That ought to be entertaining.
Yeah, maybe. Well, it being Independence Day weekend, I'm sure the people who, like that Onion article once noted, the people whose constitution exists exclusively inside their own tiny minds, will be out in force, and heaven only knows what will transpire. I wanted to sort of add in to what was being said about Florida, because Ms. Coe from Earth Justice noted that, you know, on a weekend when people are typically out at the beach enjoying recreational activities, they're sitting at home hoping they don't get poisoned in Florida. You know, the same kind of obtains up here. You're still not allowed on places like Summersville Lake. Now, ordinarily on a 4th of July weekend, Summersville Lake would have a boat traffic jam. Pardon me. One side, layover, lady with a pizza, hot baby. Yeah, that kind of thing. And it's really weird and kind of day after-y to drive across it right now, because there's nothing there. I mean, that lake is as full as I have ever seen it. And it's not even muddy or nasty or anything. It's just pretty sort of blue-green, but there's all this debris that they still haven't gotten to clean up. You know, from the floods. And we go back and so my question becomes, you know, we kind of deal with these disasters as they happen. What happens to us when they start piling up and coming so fast that we can't cope with them all? Because, see, that day is coming, is it not?
Yes, it is.
You know it.
I mean, what happens when you get a Sandy and a Katrina at the same time? Or a Sandy, Katrina, an algae bloom, an earthquake, and a flood in Appalachia?
What happens if we get a Katrina and the algae bloom, and then that all ends up everywhere? That, you know, that starts blowing around in the state, and once it dies, it becomes airborne, and it's toxic in the air.
Oh, so it dries up and blows around?
Yes.
Oh, that's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Hey.
Can't wait.
And so, you know, I'll bet you can't necessarily even protect yourself by wearing some sort of dust mask.
No.
You're going to breathe some of that crap. It's kind of like living in Appalachia. You're going to breathe that blasting dust, damn it.
It's not even breathing it. If it comes in contact with your skin, it gets you.
Yeah, and for Florida.
For any budding documentarians out there, two great musical selections to emphasize the nature of the threat. One would be from the symphonic offering called The Planets. There's a cut on the album called Mars, which is rather relentless. Yeah, it's rather relentless in its tone and all of that. And back in the 40s, there was in the Warner Brothers cartoons, whenever they had a scene of industrial might, they would play a thing, I think it was called Powerhouse. You were talking about it one day, Bob, and I sent you the... Yeah. To underscore the severity and the relentlessness of the threat, or threats, I should say, because, like you said, Bob, they're going to come one right after another, and people are not going to know whether to shit or go blind.
Well, and I mean, the analogy I always use is the guy who wakes up one morning and finds that his storefront plate glass window has had a brick put through it. So he says, well, okay, that's a one-off, and he replaces the plate glass window. Gets up the next morning, there's another brick through it. Replaces that, and by, 2 o'clock, there's a brick through it. Replaces it, 5 o'clock, a brick. And after a while, when the bricks come at 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, and 12 o'clock, the ability of the store owner to replace that plate glass window is rendered effectively zero. And that's what climate change is going to do to us. Yeah. I mean, I've got... You're going to love this. I don't want to monopolize the remainder of the conversation. $135 to go on Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. I get free books from time to time in the mail. And most of the time, the free ones are not books that I've been sitting around thinking, damn, I can't wait to read one. So when I saw Boss Man Wayne the other day and picked up the mail, there was a copy of Merchants of Despair by Robert Zubrin. Radical environmentalist, criminal pseudoscientist, and the fatal cult of anti-humanism.
Oh, that would be me.
Anti-humanism.
Oh, you're the one. And they give you...
Like I said, down here I'm looked on as the evil empire.
It's from the Heartland Institute, a nonprofit organization devoted to discovering, developing, and promoting free market solutions to social and economic problems. Dear Bob, you see it on television, read about it in newspapers and in fundraising letters that appear in your mailbox every day, and hear about it from friends and your children or grandchildren. The world is coming to an end, and it's our fault. Whether the topic is nuclear power, pesticides, population growth, genetically modified foods, fracking is in quotes, by the way, or global warming, at least they didn't put global warming in quotes, the message is the same. It's a crisis. We, meaning the government, have to do something about it. What if I were to tell you all these forecasts of doom and despair have the same source, and that they're not all based on science or even admirable concern for preserving human well-being, but just its opposite, a profoundly anti-scientific and even anti-human ideology? And we wonder why we can't deal with climate change. Gee, I wonder how many billions of dollars the Koch brothers give to the Heartland Institute.
Well, they own it.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's a wholly owned subsidiary of Koch Industries. It's silly.
Hey, there's a thing. If you get a chance to see it on HBO, the new Josh Fox documentary is really good.
Yeah, I don't get HBO, but I would probably like to see it.
Well, I'm sure it'll be online sometime or soon or whatever. But I mean, when it's run its course, just like Gasland.
Yeah. Hey, Bob, can I butt in real quick?
Hey, butt right in. Hi, Rick.
Okay. Guess who I'm seeing tomorrow night at the Greek Amphitheater with my son?
No, I won't guess. You tell me.
Ringo and his all-star band.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, Ringo's in it, and Todd Rundgren is the most well-known, you know, other member of the band, and there's various other members of the band, or various bands that he always plays with. So it should be a good show. I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, that'll be a very good show.
That's awesome. Yeah, it should be a great show.
I met Ringo once.
What's that?
Ringo once.
Oh, really? Oh, what do you know? And so by October, I don't know, I guess by October 14th, I will have seen both surviving members of the Beatles. So I guess I can check that off the bucket list. So that's kind of my deal for those of you who aren't familiar with me. I like to go to concerts. I guess in the last few years, I've sort of realized, well, geez, I live in Southern California. Everybody tours out here. Why not see them while they're still alive, you know?
Darn straight.
Yeah.
So I'll give you a report on... I guess next Friday then.
Yeah, a week from tonight, right?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
About the book that you got, I had two immediate reactions. One is to have a moment of silence for all the trees who gave up their little leafy lives for creation of the book. And then also, you know, if they're naysaying on all those things that you listed, the authors of the book probably want to concentrate on important things like where people pee.
Well, there we go.
The real menace.
There's some real genius in here. I just played the old Baptist hymnal trick. I'm sure Steve knows what that is. I just flipped it open, and there's a picture of a dog. The first bioengineered organism was the dog. Therefore, climate change is not real.
I'm going to jump in here real quick.
Yeah, go ahead, Jules.
Yeah. I have a quick plug to give. Nicole Sandler has moved to 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and that left a void of 10 to noon. And Tom and I are going to start a show up. I'm going to be the host, and he's going to executive produce for me and kind of help co-host a little bit. And so we're going to be doing a new show from 10 to noon starting on Tuesday of next week, and it's going to be a talking news show, and so I just wanted to kind of plug that
in.
Does
it have a name?
Invite everyone. He wants to call it I Hate Mornings. He wants to do a revive on that, and that's what he wants to do. So.
Oh, see, I was thinking maybe call it The Show with No Name.
Yeah.
I just tuned into a show with no name. Okay, no singing. We got almost all the way through the program without me singing.
You sing much Eastern better than Tom. That's the Eastern time, yes. This is Eastern time, of course.
That's 7 in the morning here. Wow.
All right.
I don't even get out of bed till 9.
Well, that would be noon here. Well, we will have archives, of course. So,
okay,
good deal.
And it's going to be absolutely delightful. We're not trying to compete with anyone.
No, you're not, of course. And well, you know, give me a call, and maybe we'll have some merriment together some morning.
Yes, it's just that a lot of people just didn't have any place to go, and I felt so bad. So I figured the folks that were left with nothing, I figured, you know, we'd just have a little fun together. So
sounds like a lovely idea. So why did she shift slots?
Because her and Randy Rhodes are going to be doing back-to-back shows together.
She's going to be what? Randy's going to be when?
From 4 to 6.
6.
Ah, very good.
She's on your network, Randy, Jules?
No, she's her and Nicole are doing a network together now.
Okay. Is it? I thought it was a paywall she was on.
The
live show is free from 4 to 6.
Oh, okay. I'm gonna have to find out about that.
1 to 3 Pacific.
Can somebody post a link in the chat here?
Yeah, we sure will.
Cool. Thanks.
Yeah.
I used to call her all the time.
She's wound for sound.
Yes. And I'll be doing call-ins, too.
She did a test show today. It went really well.
Oh, good. Good. Yeah, I always loved her shows. I think she made a mistake by walking away, but then she didn't have the independence and freedom she wanted with the network, you know, Clear Channel or whatever the hell she was on, you know?
Well, we got to we got to get out of here. I will let the conversation continue without me. I got to go pick up. No,
I'm going to go too, Bob. Stock tip: buy a stock at Kimberly Clark. They make Depends. So there you go.
There, indeed, indeed.
They also make Scott towels, which will be helpful in sopping up algae.
Hey, I appreciate you all, and sincerely, thanks for.
Hey, Steve, thanks to you and Karen and Cletus for helping out this evening.
No worries. Everybody have a great 4th, and I'll see you here on the 4th.
All right.
See you. Hey, bye, all. Thanks for letting me in.
Thanks, everybody, for joining in this evening in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group and on the stress line as well. Have a wonderful Independence Day weekend. And like I said, barring something thus far unforeseen, I'll be here come Monday night. That having been said, yeah, we need to raise $135 to meet Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. And hopefully that will happen so that Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge, you know, will get met. Y'all have a great evening. Thanks to everybody who makes all this happen. Thank you to everyone who makes it possible for this little program to exist in every way that you so do. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.